Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome everybody to another edition of CMC Radio. It's 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time here in New York. And today I'd like to welcome back to the show Neil Golden. Neil, how you doing?
Fine, Rob. How are you doing?
Doing very well. It's good to have you back on. I know we had about a five-part series that we did with you over the course of the last couple of months, and now we're going to be rebooting a little bit and extending it out over the course of the rest of this year, 2015, which is exciting, and I'm very happy to have you back on. So Neil, now, I know primarily what we spoke about was your work as a stock chart reader. So for all those that are just new to the show, why don't you share with us a little bit about what that is?
Okay, well, what I do basically is I use the principles of technical analysis instead of using what they call fundamental analysis, and instead of looking at reports like earnings reports for corporations and trying to figure out their debt ratios and how much money they're actually making. I just look at charts, and from that I more or less can tell most of the time which way a chart is likely to move.
And now, what are some of the things that you look for to detect such movements?
What do I look for?
Yeah, what are some of the signs that you look for to see what's going to make the price move?
Well, it's not the price itself. I look for chart formations.
Okay.
And from those, I can make the predictions from that. Price actually has nothing to do with it.
So the stock price does the stock price actually affect your ability to protect its predict its movement then?
I'll talk to you later. Could you rephrase that question again?
Sure. So does the actual price then affect your ability to predict the movement at all, or not at all? It doesn't really matter.
To me, it really doesn't matter. It's not a matter of high or low. As you know, in order to make money in the stock market, you have to buy low and sell when it gets high. But who determines what's low and who determines what's, you know, high? You know, you currently
right.
have stocks selling for well over $1,000 a share. You know, Berkshire Hathaway, I think the last time I heard it was selling for over $200,000 a share. So the idea of low and high, it's like irrelevant. So
sure.
It's based on patterns that are pretty much reliable over the years. Yeah. Brings me to another point about investing. Just like to throw in, I forgot a little bit about the disclaimer. Investing in stocks is an art. It is not a science. Just because something has happened in the past, there's no guarantee that it'll happen in the future. And you should never invest with money you can't afford to lose.
So for all those listening, please remember those words.
Right.
And now, Neil, how long did it personally take you to get a good grasp on stock chart reading?
I consider myself to be a slow learner. I took it up as a hobby in the mid-80s. And it was around 2010. I said, I'm not getting anywhere, so I went out and I found myself a mentor. And then I realized, well, I still don't know what to do, but I just kept at it and sort of try to educate myself.
Sure.
And that's when things got better, you know. So.
And now,
here I am.
And here you are today.
Yeah.
And could you share with us a little bit about some of the success stories that you had? I mean, have you had anything that you felt was a really good move on your part?
Yeah, I was going to maybe talk about later today, you know, about the earnings seasons. But everyone knows that Well, one of my greater success, I call it a, what I call a seven banger, which means overnight, by the next morning, I had seven times the amount of money that I had invested. So there is a possibility of earning a lot of money in a real short period of time. What I've witnessed, I have witnessed people, you know, making eight times their investment overnight. So that happens quite frequently. But even if you just double it, you're doing much better, you know, than investing for the long term.
Sure, but like you mentioned, it's the hard part, obviously, is knowing when to sell.
Yeah, but I'm saying that if you ever get to what they call, you know, eight times or seven times, that's a sign to signal to sell. Be happy and move on.
Absolutely. And so I know that today you wanted to focus on the earnings season. I'm sure there's a lot of people listening right now that don't really know much about that. So why don't you share with us a little bit about what exactly the earnings season is?
First I'd like to define it. This is the month of August, and corporations are reporting their earnings or loss for the previous 3 months, which would be, let's see, it would be April, May, and June.
Mm-hmm.
The year is split up into what they call four quarters. The first quarter would be January, February, March. The second quarter would be April, May, June. The third quarter would be July, August, September. And then the last quarter, or the fourth quarter, would be October, November, and December. It's important to note that not all corporations, their year doesn't start in January. Some corporations, for tax purposes, their year starts July 1st through June 30th of the following year. And as we know, the federal government in Washington, D.C., their year starts in October. So it's like October, November, and December would be the first quarter for the government. And some companies, of course, they just start in as January 1st. So what I was saying is that right now, every 3 months, we go through what we call the earning seasons, where corporations, you know, calculate their profits for the previous 3 months and report them to the Security and Exchange Commission. So this is mainly for stocks that are, you know, are actively traded on various exchanges in the United States. Let's see, there's about four exchanges: the New York Stock Exchange, the American Stock Exchange, the Pacific Coast Stock Exchange, and there's some other ones. And there's also one in Canada, but they operate a little bit different, you know. So what these corporations do is, like, for the period, they compare their latest earnings to the earnings that happened a year ago at the same time. And from that, if their increase, well, they making more money, they consider that to be a good thing. And that could cause the price of their stock to, you know, go up.
Sure. And obviously, if they're losing now, do corporations tend to make sudden moves at that point? If obviously they had like a bad year, we'll say.
A good example of that would be like the energy sector, with the price of oil per barrel, you know, going from $100, let's say, last October, down to about close to $45 a barrel now. Well, they're not making as much money when they sell their gasoline.
Right.
So, but in a sense, one thing I noticed that the oil companies are doing, you know, they're adjusting for that by laying off some of their personnel, especially in the southern states. But
sure.
Because they are so big, they are considering, you know, to still pay dividends to people who have invested in them because, quote, they have the money. It's said that, I don't know how they figure this out, but for every penny in the price of a gallon of gasoline, oil companies take in about $1 billion. So
wow.
That's a lot of money.
It sure is. Now, are there specific industries that are most affected by the earnings season? I mean, obviously, I know you said some they're different time frames, but, you know, do specific industries look out for it more or have more to lose or gain at that point?
Yeah. Well, like I said, the oil industry is the one that's or energy sector comes to mind at this point. There's also, like, the retail stores right now. That affects their, you know, hiring practices for the most part, you know, which affects employment. At this point, I would like to point out that, you know, a lot of companies, especially during last year, it's not that they were making more money, but they were just streamlining their operations. And that,
right.
You know, causes them to make money too. So it's not because they're selling more, but they're, like I said, becoming more and more automated. So in some ways, you know, we're always following the employment figures. And as you know, most people that follow the markets have heard rumors that the Fed may raise interest rates in September. Mm-hmm. But I personally, just my opinion, I feel that that would be a bad thing. Because now we're in a global economy, for one. It's not just the United States. As you know, recently we've react to what's happening in places like Greece,
yes.
China, Puerto Rico, and other countries that affect the American market just as well.
Sure. And it's interesting that you brought up the situation, obviously, in Greece, very, very, still very fresh. How does that really play into the American market, as you were just talking about?
Well, it has to do with the employment and the banking situation in Europe. It's all centered, I feel, around the banks and how well they're doing. If people aren't working, and I know for one of the problems with Greece is they have a hard time collecting taxes, you know, mm-hmm. from the people that do work. They don't have strong enforcement in that area. And if they can't pay off their loans, well, they go into default. And at that point, they have to start handing over the assets of their country. As far as I know, you know, Greece is a country that mainly relies on tourism to make its money.
Sure, yeah.
So, you know, if the country is in turmoil, there's a lot of demonstrations and stuff, people aren't likely not to want to go to vacation there, and that would drastically affect them too. Which causes, you know, a run on their banks, and because Greece is part of the European Union or whatever, Greece itself does not have the power to print more money.
Mm-hmm.
They have to
right.
get the money from mainly the Germans or the French or other people to loan them money so that
right.
they can pay the people who work for their government and shore their economy up, which I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, the government stepping in to boost up their economy.
Right, absolutely. But what would you say then they should, I mean, you would probably know a little more about this than the average person because you follow the markets, and I'm sure that the Greek market's different than following the American trends, but I mean, what are some of the steps that they're going to take to obviously enhance their current economic status?
I really don't know. I can't, you know, because I don't follow the politics. But,
sure.
You know, economics and politics, they have always gone closely together. Just ask Donald Trump.
Yeah.
in a sense that, you have a left hand knowing what the right hand is doing. Mm-hmm. So the solution, I do not know, but I can say this, that in this country we're having trouble with Social Security, and it's been brought out recently that if everyone were to pay taxes on the income they made, especially those who make over $120,000 a year, you know, Social Security would never run out of money in
right.
America. So, you know, maybe that was a quick, simple solution that if you're making several million dollars, well, maybe more than just the first $120,000 should be taxed for Social Security reasons.
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so getting back to what we were just speaking about, with regard to the earnings season, I do want to know kind of some things that people should really focus on or look out for during the season. I mean, is it, you know, are there better times to stay away from certain stocks? I mean, how does that kind of play into everything?
Oh, okay. Well, right now, you know, for the whole year, the American market has been more or less going sideways since, you know, January. It peaked around 18,000 the Dow, 18,500 or something, and went a little bit higher. And right now it's around 17,500. But for me, you know, I like to follow the trends. I can't really tell you tomorrow what the market's going to do.
Right.
So the best advice I would say, if you are an investor looking to make money or professional investor, you would take a position going both ways. You would find a 300 bet saying that tomorrow the market is going up, or you find another bet, let's say, on a stock like Home Depot, finding that the market would be going down. And supposedly, the following day when the company made its earnings reports, well, if the market liked it and it was going up, well, it would go up a lot faster than it went down. So, and that way, you know, you can edge out a smaller profit, but it would be a profit, you know.
Right.
So that's the only advice I would have now for someone that was a professional investor to be doing in a market that's going sideways, because right now, you know, the market is sort of going, well, it's, what do you call that? It's declining, yeah, a declining
yep.
market.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, with the current state right now, what is what are your some of your moves in terms of investments?
Well, for the most part, I'm out. You know, like I'm saying, there is no sure thing out there right now.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I would tell you, anyone that's listening, I would say that the market is going down,
mm-hmm.
and at this point, it would be a good point to just hold on to your investments until the best part of the year comes around. Like I was saying in a previous talk we had, that, you know, historically September is the worst month of the year, but
right.
don't be disalarmed by that, because it's immediately followed by October, which is usually the start of the best part of the year, which is from October through April.
Right.
So.
And the reason for that, I mean, is it correct in saying that the reason for the rise then in the market would be because of obviously holidays and such coming up after October and stuff?
Yeah. Very true, because in December in the past, before computers, that's when the retail stores made 90% of their profit, mm-hmm. was on the Christmas holiday. There's a day called Black Friday where I think it's usually in October or November where stores, retail stores, you know, break even for the year.
Right.
And then with Christmas on the way, that's where they make their profit. And but right now, you know, because of computers, brick and mortar stores aren't doing as well as they used to. And whereas online shopping is really taking over, you know, in a big way. So those companies are doing very well, too.
Sure, absolutely. Right. And another thing that I know that we wanted to focus on for today was multinational corporations and having trouble, the issue that they're having with strong American money. So why don't you take us into that a little bit?
Oh, okay. Well, some of your listeners may be aware of the fact that China has devalued what they call the yuan. And recently, I think, Apple came out? They were saying that they're no longer interested in selling their telephones in America. They want to sell them in China. Collectively, China has 1.3 billion people, and their middle class mm-hmm. is over, you know, 700 million, which is about twice the size of the whole United States. So that's a much bigger market. But with the mm-hmm. Chinese dollar all of a sudden being devalued, it means that it takes more Chinese dollars for a person in China to buy that same cell phone that they were interested in buying. Maybe, 4 months ago, they could have gotten it a little bit, let's say for $600, but now, you know, maybe it costs, you know, $650. So this affects the profit margin on Apple because people have to spend more money. It makes their products less accessible to people in foreign countries. So
right.
The bottom line is they're not going to be making as much money as they would have maybe last year. So that affects them in a negative way. And then in Europe, I just know maybe about a year ago the euro was worth maybe $1.50 to one American dollar. It was worth more, but now the euro is worth around $1.10. So. It takes more, you know, euros to buy American exports at this point, which, you know, hurts the American companies. And, of course, the same thing is going on in Russia. We're no longer getting along with Russia.
Right.
And, you know, companies like Procter & Gamble that want to sell, you know, their goods to the Russians, now the Russians, the ruble is falling apart, and
right,
they can't afford to buy American companies. So as far as the multinationals go, for the rest of the year, I don't think their outlook is that good. And also it's going to depend on Congress. I was surprised the other day the International Monetary Fund was not funded by Congress, and immediately I think Boeing Airlines came out with a statement that they were going to export like $10,000 to a foreign country where they can get things made cheaper. So, you know, I feel that Americans, we should subsidize our large multinational companies, you know, like Caterpillar, Boeing, and other people, and other companies, so to make our products competitive with foreign countries that do the same thing, subsidize their own companies so that they can sell products overseas.
And now, are there any other steps that, that should be taken, or that you would view, you know, that, that could be taken to really reduce the issue?
Well, personally, I would just say I would like to see the International Monetary Fund back in business. I think it does a good thing. It guarantees, you know, that these companies, American companies, will be paid, and it, you know. Like I said, it helps employment in this country. So I view that as being a good thing. You know, like I said, buy American.
Right.
And I wouldn't, you know, be wasting time in the BRIC countries. I know why, you know, China, you know, in the past year, their economy has been growing at 7 and 8% a year. And, you know, anyone investing in a Chinese company would be getting great returns, but from here on out, because things are so global and international, their growth rate is really going to be slowing down a lot.
Right. And how soon would you say something like that is happening with their growth rate slowing?
It's taking place right now, and that's why I personally am afraid that it's too soon to be for the Federal Reserve to be raising interest rates, because although our employment figures have shown that, you know, nationally it's around 5.3% unemployed, it would only, it could backfire in a sense that if people have to pay more taxes and banks are charging people, you know, interest on their credit cards and that kind of thing, because people are, you know, sort of in debt at this point.
Sure.
It won't spur the economy onto the new heights that are needed. So looking forward to the end of the year, I don't see any dramatic changes in saying that the market is going higher by any way or means. You know, I think if we're lucky, it'll continue to go sideways, but at this point, things are seem to be getting worse. There's something I read about the other day called the death cross, and this has to do with when you open up, you know, the Wall Street Journal or Investors Business Daily, you look at the charts of like the Dow Jones Industrials, you'll see that there's usually a 200-day moving average. And what the death cross means is that at this point, the 50-day moving average has just crossed the 200-day moving average. And this is sort of a bearish outlook for the economy, I feel, for the rest of the year. So in that sense, I would say it's another indication that the market could be going lower and that maybe people should just be holding on to their money until the rebound starts happening and the market starts going up again. But when that's going to happen, I have no idea, or how low it's going to go, I do not know. But I'm not hoping for what they call a double-dip recession. We've already had one severe dip in 2008, and I'm just not ready for another one.
Well, Neil, unfortunately, we are running out of time for today's episode. I do want to thank you, though, for your time today and all of the information that you shared with us. Obviously, we're excited to have you back on in 2 weeks, same time roughly, and same day. So thanks again for coming on today, Neil. And if there's anything else that you'd like to share?
No, not at this point. I'm just going to say thanks for having me. It's going to take me a while to, you know, get back into the swing of things. But I hope some of the things I've said today people will find it useful. And remember, when you're investing, you're buying risk.
Well, Neil, thanks again for coming on today. And from everybody here at CMC Radio, this is Rob May saying we'll see you soon. Take care, everybody.